Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Grace Onions, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. My name is David Law, a commentator for BBC Radio 5 Live and BT Sport in the UK. Catherine Whittaker is my co-host, but she's on a plane on her way home from Korea at the moment, where the Winter Olympics have finally finished, which means that she and I will be back together next week to go over all the things that have happened over the last few weeks in the tennis world. We obviously had the joys of Chris Clary from the New York Times with us last week, and we will have Catherine on the show this week because we have our special listeners' questions special. The second instalment here for you this week. Questions chosen by our guest editor, Grace Onions, who backed the show so generously in our crowdfunding Kickstarter to help us continue the Tennis Podcast in 2018. So, some of the questions we were asked, my goodness, there were a lot of them. We were asked whether tennis players should ever comment about anything other than tennis matches because of all the various talking points that we've had. Remember Tennis Sandgren at the Australian Open, all the furore about the things that he was saying, the Margaret Court arena, all that subject. Should we be asking questions about that? That was one of the things we were asked. And we were asked, who are the easiest players to interview, whether Federer should skip the clay, Nadal maybe should skip the hard court season. Loads of subjects that we got into, and that is coming your way very soon with Catherine Whittaker and myself. It's been a busy week in the tennis world. Off the court, Eugenie Bouchard has won her case against the USTA and been awarded damages after she slipped and fell in the US Open trainer's room in 2015. Sounds as if it was a pretty significant sum of money that she was awarded. 75% of the damages were put at the door of the USTA, and 25% of the blame given to Bouchard for that fall by the courts in the United States. Bouchard was ranked 25 in the world when she fell in that locker room after a third round win. She only played one more match all year, retired from that with dizziness. I remember commentating on it at the time. And that was actually pretty distressing, seeing her try to play her first match after that fall, and she clearly wasn't right. She's now ranked 116 in the world. I mean, it is some fall, isn't it, in terms of ranking. And whether the fall in the locker room and the fall in her ranking is actually related, who knows? But anyway, the guilt has been adjudged to be that at the door of the US Open, the USTA, and that's what's happened. And Eugenie Bouchard has won that case. On the court, titles in Dubai to Elena Svitolina over Daria Kasatkina, who had an excellent week herself. She beat Johanna Konta from a couple of match points down. She also beat Garbiñe Muguruza when she was well down in that one as well, but eventually Svitolina is the one who got the title. In Marseille, Karen Khachanov beat Luca Puy in the final, 7-5 in the third. Well done him. In Rio, Diego Schwartzman, little Diego, beat Fernando Verdasco in the final. And a first title in Delray Beach, a first ATP title of any type for Francis Tiafoe, who beat Juan Martín del Potro, Chung Hyung, and Denis Shapovalov. And then finally in the final, he beat Peter Gojovcic. who I think I've just about managed to pronounce correctly. So well done, Francis Tiafoe. This week, it's time for the Dubai Men and Acapulco, where Rafael Nadal makes his return. And it is noticeable just how much stronger the Acapulco draw is than the Dubai tournament this time. Both 500 tournaments, but Acapulco has something like 6 of the world's top 10. Nothing like that same strength in Dubai, which is slightly unusual, slightly surprising to me anyway. We'll talk about all that next week. For now, though, let's start with those listener questions, as chosen by Grace Onions. And Grace had a couple of her own, first of all. There's been a lot of discussions at the Australian Open about the politics of players, obviously specifically Margaret Court and Tennis Sangren. Do you think that sport should be kept separate from politics and off-court behaviour? Should we be going into press conferences, Catherine, and not asking them about this stuff? Should we just say, right, you know, it's a press conference and it's a tournament, let's cover that, let's forget all this other stuff?
No, I don't. I think, look, if a player doesn't want to be asked about it, plain and simple, you don't express your views about it. You don't put them out there into the world on social media. You know people are going to see that. And you have every right, as frustrating as it might sometimes be for us, to not comment on things when asked about them. But I don't think there should be any problem with us asking. You know, sport, people take a lot of notice of sport, and it has an awful lot of power for social change, both individuals and as a movement and institution in itself. You know, I genuinely think, as much as there is a depressingly long way to go, you know, the status of women's tennis and its relative equality compared to other sports, you know, tennis leads the way in terms of gender equality, which is in some ways a sad statement because of how far there is to go. And this is the best of a bad bunch of sports for inequality terms. But, you know, I genuinely think that is important in the world and society, and it affects the way people view things. You know, it has a real positive impact. So absolutely not. We would lose far too much, and we'd lose far too much debate. And you know, individuals can have power for good. You know, Serena Williams in the last year or so has become an extraordinary advocate on social media for a number of causes that she believes in. She wasn't always. She's really grown into it in the last year or so. Same with Andy Murray. And there's others as well. There are others that shy away from it all. You know, when have you ever heard Roger Federer say anything, you know, controversial or political or anything? He has decided to you know, for the sake of his...
That's a good point.
For the sake of his, you know, reputation. It's not, I'm quite sure he has views on a lot of things. You know, he's a smart guy, but he has never, ever strayed into those waters.
He sort of navigates them without us giving him a hard time.
Yeah,
which
he does.
Could, you know, the media could say, come on, Roger, what do you actually think about this stuff? And if he refused to give an answer, say it's disappointing that he hasn't.
They could. You know, I find it disappointing that he's never expressed a view on equal prize money or gender equality or anything like that, because, sadly, because of the enormous impact him expressing support for it would have. You know, it's disappointing that sometimes he doesn't speak out about things because of how powerful his voice could be. But equally, you know, and I think this is a question on the list that we might come onto later, that what he has at stake, you know, the more power you have for change, the more you have at stake and the more reluctant you might be.
I wonder whether as well, post-career, whether he, you know, might feel differently, might feel that he crystallises his view more firmly in hindsight as to where he stands on things and be more out there in terms of expressing them. It's possible, because I don't necessarily think that all players that now are voices on subjects were always that way.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, as I say, Serena Williams, the perfect example of that. And also, these guys, they eat, sleep and breathe tennis. You know, they probably don't have a lot of time to watch Newsnight or...
Federer's got two sets of twins.
Or read a paper or anything like that. You know, these aren't necessarily the most informed voices you can be hearing on political matters. But nonetheless, because of their status... They do have impact.
And so that's not to denigrate Federer, because I think of he probably is one of the, well, one of the more intelligent and
sure
I would like to think
Newsnight.
Pretty informed people generally.
I think he does have crystallised views, ones that may evolve and change post-retirement. I don't think it's that he doesn't have views on things. I think he's just navigated
too
a way
much hassle,
of
really.
Yeah, not expressing them.
Can understand it. And I remember Andy Murray saying early on when he got burned on a couple of things, he said it, for a while he felt it, he was better off not expressing views. And Tim Henman always used to say, you know, you don't see the real me, you see the one that wants to basically just not have the hassle, really. And so I end up saying nothing. And he's much more of a character than people realise. The second question on the list here from Grace is related to that. She says, Billie Jean King and Martina Navratilova both said that they would boycott the Margaret Court Arena. Why do you think that players don't do that sort of thing these days? I mean, we've touched on that briefly, and she points out sponsorship and et cetera like that. If you get involved in that, is that a problem for you? I remember when Andy Murray expressed his view on Maria Sharapova's suspension, and he actually commented on his own racket sponsor head supporting her, and he was critical, which is, you know, that is quite a step to take, to criticize your own sponsor and their stance. You know, I mean, I had a lot of respect for that, because that takes nerve.
Absolutely. And I know you can say, you know, he's got all sorts of other sponsorship deals and he's a squillionaire, so he can afford to lose one. But as we've said, that applies to Roger Federer too, and we don't hear him speaking out about things. So it does take nerve. I think sponsorship is an enormous part of it. I do. I think the money in sponsorship at the top level is of a different order of magnitude to prize money. You know, it makes prize money look like a drop in the ocean. And there is absolutely no question that a sponsor's worst nightmare is expressing any kind of controversial political views on any subject. They just want you to be... They don't care about the real you, really. They create a brand and an image, a cartoon-type character, and they just need you to be that. Now, there are very few individuals that have managed to make their brand being, you know, Andy Murray's brand is to be the guy
to be authentic.
To be authentic.
Yeah. And
but that is rare.
I think I don't want to be standing here accusing Roger Federer of being inauthentic. I don't think he is.
No, he's not.
That's not the level to which we're going with this. I think he and Murray, what they have managed to do with their sponsorship is put out who they are or who they want to be generally, and then sponsors have come on board with that. I do feel, though, that there's more going on with Federer in his mind than he will let you know about, because he probably does think it's just not worth the hassle.
Of course, not just him. We're picking out him as an example because he's the bastion of
If you've got a bunch of sponsors and one of them supported something you're really against, how would we handle
that? It's incredibly easy for me to say, because I'm not in that position, but I would very much like to think that I'm a pretty stubborn, outspoken person.
Really?
I'm pretty sure, as sure as I can be without actually being in that situation, I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't just keep quiet and go away quietly.
I think
quietly.
It's about degrees.
Do you think
as well.
I would keep quiet and no. go away quietly?
Nope.
No, but then I also don't think that I would just take a check from anyone willy-nilly without being pretty sure that my views were pretty aligned with theirs. Not, you know, checks welcome, of course.
So do send them in. No, all right, fine. So third question on the list here. Which players are the easiest, most interesting to interview on either tour? Easiest. So in our previous one, we had who's the most difficult? And the question Grace asks is, apart from Federer, who generally seems to be excellent at his media obligations. I mean, I think there are different types of interviewee. I quite enjoy interviewing people like Andy Roddick and Andy Murray, who do slightly make you work for your answers. Not that they don't give you good answers, but your questions better be good. you know, because they will assess your question, and if it is not very good, they will make it very clear that you've made a bit of a fool of yourself. And at the same time, I quite enjoy the joust in that way. But I tend to prefer speaking to players who've retired in a way, because they've got more to fall back on and they've gone through it. I mean, I remember interviewing Jim Courier when he was still on the tour, and he was hard work, you know, and he knows it. He knows he was hard work. And then when he retired, he said, crikey, I wish I'd been world number one when I was 31 and not 21. Because by the time he'd retired, he realized the value of the media, and he was helpful and he was effusive and he was engaging. And back when he was playing his career, he was not helpful.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, which players are the easiest / most interesting? Well, I'd say the easiest are rarely the most interesting, and vice versa. You know, I get nervous before an interview with Andy Murray, which I wouldn't with most top players, because of exactly what you just said about... I know the questions have to be good, and I care what he thinks about the questions. I care about his response to them. I care about his assessment, because I think he's smart and he knows his stuff, and he doesn't just trot out platitudes or pat answers. And that's a challenge for me, and I know I've got to be on my game. So I don't find it easy interviewing him. I think it probably brings the best out of me, but it certainly is... one of the most interesting people to interview without question, and boringly, I would agree with you too about ex players. We've both worked on the Champions Tour, and the stuff you get out of them.
Some of it we can't use.
Yeah, I mean, we just want insights, don't we? Honest insights. We understand when we don't get them. We've talked about all of the things tennis players have going on, and the various reasons they, you know, not wanting the hassle. We get it. But selfishly, we still want the unguarded insights, and you're a lot more likely to get those from a retired player than you are from a current player who's got a match to play tomorrow and definitely doesn't want to see their face in the headlines for saying the wrong thing about...
Quite excited with the way Denis Shapovalov is answering questions so far in his young career. He's thoughtful. He seems to process what you've asked him and give you an anecdote, you know, give you...
Oh, can I just... throw someone else in there, sure. Naomi Osaka.
Oh yeah, well she didn't mind telling me a joke in an interview. Yeah. So terrible joke, but I loved it.
She's an absolute joy. Yeah,
she's good. A bonus question as well from Grace. She wants to know, since a couple of other people have asked, is when, where, and on what surface is the much anticipated Lauren Whittaker rematch? What surface would I be best on? I think I don't know, anything quick. You know, swing it out wide, come in, knock off the volley. What do you think?
Dear, oh dear, there's an image. I'm not bothered about surface. I demand that the temperature be sub 30 degrees.
Right. What is it now? It's about 40. Let's get out there.
I can't perform basic bodily functions, apparently, on anything above 30 degrees. But yeah, surface wise, when and where? I mean, both of us forgot to bring our tennis rackets.
That was a slight
so that is problematic. So when, somewhere where we have tennis rackets, where, somewhere where people will let us play on the court.
I've had about 5 invitations this week, including Koo Yong, which used to actually stage the Australian Open. They want to stage our rematch. Who'd have thought it? Queens have just offered as well.
Can they provide tennis rackets?
No, don't think so. We haven't got time now. So anyway, soon is all I'm saying. I've 3 years I've been waiting for this, and I'm going to get my own back. So questions that Grace has picked out on social media from all of you. Dan Connolly from London in England says, what do you think about best of five for the women, or introducing best of five for both men and women from quarterfinals onwards?
I think we need to find a way for there to be parity, whatever the solution there. I think parity is the ultimate goal.
Why?
Because equality is a good thing.
No, I realise equality is a good thing in terms of equal pay, but why does it matter? You obviously
I don't
feel
think it matters as much as some people think it does, but at the moment it's a stick for people to beat women's tennis with, and I don't want there to be any of those sticks at the moment. Personally, I don't agree with it being any kind of detraction from the validity of equal prize money, but it leaves the door open for debate. And I don't want there to be any door open for debate. I want it just to be so natural and logical for everyone to go, yeah, of course women should be paid the same. Of course. You know, it's just, it's so clear to me. I want there to be no equivocation about it. And at the moment there can be. And also I want to see more women's tennis. I want to see best of five. I want to see the ultimate, not all the time. And
would you rather see best of five all the way through the tournament, both men and women, or would you rather see them both go best of three until fourth round is done, and then quarterfinals onwards, best of five?
Yeah, I think that's the best solution, because scheduling wise, it's pretty much, you know, just from a practical point of view, I believe it's pretty much impossible for the Slams to stage best of five, men's and women's. So it's obviously more problematic in week one when there are more matches. So yeah, for me, I think the most satisfactory solution across the board is best of five, men's and women's, from quarterfinals onwards.
Yeah, I think I'd probably go with that as well. For the same reasons, because I certainly agree. I'm absolutely 100% that equal prize money is just the right thing to do anyway. And it takes that element of the argument away. Second question is from Denison Delagero from Australia, who says, do you think the resurgence of Federer and Nadal after Murray and Djokovic got injured is due more to their brilliance or a judgment on the younger players who have yet to break through, maybe?
I think it's mostly due to their brilliance. I think that's the biggest portion of the puzzle. It depends what we're talking about with younger players. I think there's two different things. You've got the hashtag next gen, which is your Chungs and your Shapovalovs.
They're doing what they should be doing.
They're doing exactly what they should be doing. And they are really, really young. You know, Federer didn't win a slam till he was 21. So to say that Denis Shapovalov isn't breaking through when he's still 18 and he's, you know, reached a fourth round of a slam.
The ones you could judge maybe a little are Kyrgios and Zverev. Zverev, and I mean,
he's
at the same time,
21.
He's still only 20. So, but he's been doing it for a while now, and he's yet to reach a quarter final of a Grand Slam.
Yeah, but he's only being judged because he set his own standards so high.
True.
Because he made his initial breakthrough at such a young age. So, I still don't think it's fair to say that he's failing to break through. Kyrgios, maybe, but he is such a unique case.
And he's such an immature talent.
Yeah.
Really. It feels like he's only now just starting to shave off the rough edges, really.
I think the ones that you could level the accusation at are the middling generation, the team Nishikori, Dimitrov, Raonic generation. Now, there's physical issues going on there. We discussed in the our first Any Questions tennis podcast. I'm thinking I will come up with a better name than that, by the way. I feel like there's a pun in there somewhere.
Oh, God.
We talked about, you know, injury and physical impediments being such an issue for Nishikori and Raonic in particular. Dimitrov, there's a lot going on there, isn't there? I mean, that's a whole Any Questions podcast
certainly.
In itself. And team... Well, yeah, I think probably the accusation can be levelled at team. I do question some of the decisions he's making about his career.
Even though before their injuries took hold, these guys were not beating the top players.
No,
often
they weren't.
Enough. Nishikori did it against Djokovic at that US Open, but then he lost out in the final. Now, it may just be that they're just not as good as that generation.
I mean, they're not as good as Federer and Nadal.
But should one of them have won a slam by now, in your view?
Well, look, I mean, Cilic broke through and won a slam. I know he's a little bit older, but he's the pack behind. He's 29, isn't he? So he's the pack behind. People have muscled in and won the odd one.
Stan has done incredibly well in that
way.
Because he's made himself part of that group.
Yeah,
when he
doesn't really think of himself as part of that group because he doesn't have the consistency, but to muscle in, you know, almost quite literally and win three slams.
It's why I'm so bowled over by what Nadal and Federer have done in the last year, because I thought, well, we both thought that just was not going to happen.
I certainly didn't. You know what? This time last year, we were recording this on the eve of the men's final, we were looking at the Nadal-Federer final as this prized, rare...
Freakish
diamond that we would never see again, and we
just
must
gotta
treasure
make the best of it.
Every single moment. And then this year I heard people going, oh, God, we don't want a Nadal-Federer final again.
Who's saying
God,
that?
God, we don't want Federer winning again, do we?
Who said that?
I don't want to cry. I've heard that. You know, oh, let's get someone different along. Let's, you know, why aren't we seeing any new faces? people are fickle.
It's a combo.
It's a combo. I think it's largely that those two are the two greatest of all time for me, and it is freakish and extraordinary that they are existing in the same era, and that era also includes Murray, Djokovic and Wawrinka.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare insurance plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
David Shanze Teles. I've probably butchered that. I'm sorry, David. From Valencia in Spain, says, do you think Nadal should skip the US March hard court tournaments to preserve his body for the clay, and should Federer skip the clay again?
I think Federer should and probably will skip the clay again. I mean, it's panned out all right for him, hasn't it? I think he will play the French Open again. I don't think we'll never see him at the French Open again, but I think he's planning to play a few more years, so I think this year... he'll skip it again.
I think though that if he were not to do that well in Indian Wells, Miami, surely he would then start playing some clay.
Yeah, maybe it depends on the
he
body.
Won them
it's the
both
changing
last
surfaces though that's challenging on the body.
Yeah.
You're right. The complexion can change a lot over the course of the next couple of months and what
that's
happens in Indian Wells and Miami. But at the moment, I think it's quite likely he'll be the same again.
If you could just sort of, you know, win the Australian Open, you know, go and play Indian Wells, Miami, maybe win them, maybe not, and then think, say, well, I'm going to have 8 weeks off now, have a bit of a holiday, you know, go and see the kids, go to, you know, do all these things,
yeah,
and then
start hitting on grass.
I'll just get ready nicely, and I'll be in banging form when it comes down around for the grass.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get the impression he desperately missed the clay court season last year.
He's played
a
lot of clay court seasons.
Yeah.
This guy's had 20 years on the tour, so I think he probably will as well. I think he'll probably play the French. But remember, last year we felt as though he didn't play the French because he just didn't want to give these guys a look in of any kind of fragility. He didn't want them to have a win over him. He wanted to go to
Wimbledon.
Yeah,
he didn't want to give Nadal any kind of an edge. He knew he had it over him for the time being. He didn't know to what extent at that stage because they'd only played a couple of matches. But
what about Nadal?
There's too many unknowns for me to be able to say about Nadal. Really, they've got the hip injury, which he says is going to take about 3 weeks to heal. The knee is still not 100%. Percent, although it's not the reason he
didn't look
he exited
impeded
the knee-wise. He didn't, but then look I'm straying into medical territory that I've got no business doing. But when one thing is out of line, that's when other things start going wrong.
True.
So I do wonder if the hip going is perhaps something to do with the residual knee problem. I don't know, but I do know that 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 is how injuries, you know, start proliferating in that way. So there's too many unknowns physically. I would be very surprised if he did that, just because of such a hungry, what a hungry competitor he is.
He likes playing.
And he needs matches.
Yeah,
he needs matches.
Does.
And I know
think he'll play the
those
hard
two
season.
Hard court seasons don't lead into a slam. So perhaps on one hand makes them less significant.
Grace has also picked out a question here. When the Williams sisters and the Big Four, and I guess Big Five, eventually retire in the next couple of years, do you think there will be a period of tennis mourning, i.e. a drop in interest in tennis as a result?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, a little bit.
What I do feel is that this period of crossover is absolutely essential for people to discover new players. And we saw this at the O2. Grigor Dimitrov is an incredibly popular champion. Unfortunately, he hasn't been able to pick up that baton and go all the way at a slam yet. And that's what it will take. It will take somebody new, one of this new generation, to break through and to become the big star.
Yeah, it's like it's like handover week in an office, isn't
like
it? You're writing handover
when Federer
notes.
Beat Sampras back at Wimbledon in 01. That was a huge moment. I know it took him a couple more years, but that immediately put a line in the sand. You need a Shapovalov or someone like that to do something like that at a slam.
Agreed. Yeah, I mean, I think that's coming. Or what Kyrgios did against Nadal at Wimbledon a few years back. I know, again, Kyrgios, special case. But
I'm quite optimistic.
They are. I'm optimistic in the medium to long term. I think in the immediate, though, of course, there'll be a bit of a lull. There will be. It'll be like when Take That split up, won't it?
That's 22 years ago.
We're all over it now, but
yes, we're all devastated.
But
at
there
the time.
Will be hotlines opened for people to cry down.
Time for a couple more on Instagram. Andrew Jacobs says, "Hi, Catherine, David. I love the podcast." Oh, cheers, Andrew. My question is not lamenting about the future of tennis. I'm excited for it. He says, which male next-gen player will be the first to win a slam? That's a good question, isn't it?
Probably Zverev still. It's only a matter of time, isn't it? The most likely to win one first. I think he's probably the safest bet. Still currently.
Yeah, he is. I still have my reservations about him.
As a slam winner at any stage?
No. I would have thought he would get there. But then if somebody had told us when Dimitrov was 20 that he wouldn't win a slam, and he might not now. He's 26. We talk about it. We convinced ourselves at the end of last year that he would.
There's something different mentally about Zverev. He's not as gifted as Dimitrov. He's very, very gifted, but there's something different about it. It's a different type of gift. It's Djokovic versus Federer, isn't it? It's that metronomic, relentless.
Yeah.
That relentlessness on the court. But he's a different specimen mentally to Grigor Dimitrov.
I think he is, in as much as I think his commitment won't wax and wane, which it has with Dimitrov. He's back on it now, and he's had a really good year or so, but it can go in and out. I think Zverev desperately wants it at the expense of all else, really. So that should aid his continuous improvement. But until he breaks through, you're still getting fourth-round losses.
Well,
scar tissue builds.
Who else would you throw into the mix?
Dennis the Menace. I think that kid is
first. He's 18, though.
I know he is. Look, he might not be the first.
That's what is being asked here. The first,
is
not the most likely.
He's capable of the spectacular.
Of course, look, that was not what was asked, David. We weren't asked how great
you
think Dennis Shapovalov is.
Well, if you could let me finish my point,
I could go on about that all day.
His ability of the spectacular is that, like Kyle Edmund at that Australian Open, one big win opens a draw. If he gets a good passage through, it's the same with Kyrgios. I'd back those guys in a head-to-head against really top players because of their one-off ability to produce. You still need a passage through. I fully understand that. But Edmund had it. He got one good win over Kevin Anderson. Suddenly it opened up and he took his chance and he went through.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty strong argument. I still I don't know. I still think the safer money for the first is Zverev, but
yeah, it is safe.
You do make a good argument, and I certainly think Shapovalov will be winning slams. I'm gonna be cautious on this one.
Who'd have thought it?
I'm gonna stick rather than twist.
Catherine, you know, she's just desperate to say, I'll tell you, I think Shapovalov is going to win Wimbledon this year. Time for one more here. We have Paulie, who says, Roger Federer knew that Chung had blisters prior to their semi-final. So did Mary Carrillo. She told us on your show. How does this kind of info find its way around the tournament? Love to know the nuances and details and of intel and opponent research. Well, the fact is that if you walk around and talk to enough people, you find out stuff. I mean, in our game, in the media world, if you talk to enough coaches and if you hang around areas enough, you see things, you hear things. And I must admit, I did not know about the blisters of Chung, but Mary clearly did. But then she's hanging around with people at Tennis Channel like Paul Annacone and various other coaches, and they do talk to one another and they do see things and they do end up in locker rooms and they, you know, word gets around about these things, doesn't it?
And these guys and women, they have huge teams now. So if you've got an issue, you've got an agent that knows about it, and you've got a coach that knows about it, and maybe a secondary coach that knows about it, and a trainer that knows about it, and a physio that knows about it. And maybe one of them goes and drops a racket off the stringer, and a stringer knows about it. You know, that there's so many routes to market for rumours. Or more than rumour. This isn't sort of gossip mongering we're talking about. But yeah, it's not like one guy with a blister that's keeping it to himself. You know, these are sort of mini industries.
Yeah, it takes quite a lot of doing to keep something completely quiet like that, really, doesn't it? I mean, you know, even thinking back to Marin Cilic when he had his blisters at Wimbledon, there were signs beforehand because of various things you might see in practice or whatever it was. And sometimes you can be off kilter as well. Sometimes you can think you've seen something you haven't. And certain players are easier to read than others and that kind of thing. But, yeah, that's generally how it works, isn't it? People talk.
Yeah, people loiter and people talk.
They do.
I just noticed at the very bottom, this ties in. This is not a question that I'm sure we'll be able to answer without being slapped with some sort of libel or slander lawsuit. But but stirring the pot, Dave Levy asks, what's the best tennis rumour you've not been able to substantiate?
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Our good friend Dave. The best tennis rumour that I've not been able to substantiate. I think it would probably be that Goran Ivanišević is going to coach Novak Djokovic.
Yeah. It wasn't substantiated because apparently it was started by me.
Where did you get that from?
I reported it, and then somebody else, quite relatively reputable, reported it, and I thought, oh right, great. It turns out they're reporting it on the basis of me speculating about it.
Because
this is how these things start.
Because it seemed to add up, didn't it?
I still think
to
it's
us.
A good idea.
Yeah. And that was based on a conversation with Goran, wasn't it? About how much we thought he would love to do it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he's still sitting by the phone, I'm quite sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think he's going to... Claxon here, completely out of date question for when people are actually listening to this. Do you think he's going to go and have a sneaky word with Marin Cilic before the final?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd have thought so. I would think that they're still pretty close. Do you think Goran's going to coach again soon? And who do you think would be a good person for him
to
coach?
I think he's so desperate to coach, he'd probably take your call, David.
Would he?
For a rematch, yeah.
We've already got Jill on the books.
Yeah.
Jill Krabas.
I mean, he goes to all the slams anyway to play the Legends events, doesn't he? He does the odd bit of media work, but nothing. You know, he's not a regular TV personality or pundit. Yes, he's got a family, but he's used to a life of travel. Of course he wants to coach. I'm not saying he'd take... Well, maybe I am saying he'd take any phone call coming if he'd take yours. But, yeah, we're going to see him again. But the problem is that super coaches seem to be, for the moment at least, a bit out of fashion.
Who do you think he could get a lot out of the way he got the ultimate out of Marin Cilic. I mean, there must be somebody out there with a big game who's just not wielding
Kyrgios?
It right.
I think he'd love to coach Kyrgios. McEnroe would love to coach Kyrgios. They're all queuing up. He just doesn't want any of them.
Goran and Kyrgios.
Yeah, the way he said, I love him, it was pretty intense.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I want that to happen.
Yeah, I do too.
Imagine that.
I could see it. I could see it.
That's a rumour I'm going to start.
This is how these things start.
Brilliant.
So, Dave, this is the new best rumour that we're completely unable to substantiate.
This is taking off right now. So, it's been lovely. We've enjoyed our questions-only podcast.
And, which will have a better pun-based title by the time it goes to air, I promise.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll look forward to that. So, there we have it. Our listeners' questions special installment number two. Hope you enjoyed it. I have been David Law here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. We are also brought to you by La Manga Club, the holiday destination in Spain, which if you want to play golf and if you want to play tennis and if you want to have the life of Riley, you want to get yourself over there. Very nice indeed. Catherine and I both had a chance to do so last year, and it is worth doing, La Manga Club. Triple S is our executive producer, alongside Melanie Bowes, our predictions champion. Tennisballs.com are great supporters of ours as well. Charlie the Ferret is our mascot. Of course he is. And we will be back with another instalment of the Tennis Podcast in a week's time. Catherine Whittaker will be back. So I can no longer get away with this raft of pole vaults that I've been running over the last few weeks without any interruptions whatsoever. Go on Twitter, @TennisPodcast. See all of them. Vote before she gets back. I'm telling you, that's the last chance you've got. We're also on Instagram, on Facebook. You can go to the Tennis Podcast shop, get yourself a T-shirt, a sweatshirt, a bag. We've got the lot, I tell you. But most of all, we are a Tennis Podcast, and we will be back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.